So it wasn't supposed to happen the way that it did. That is, speaking of the Alliance, Saturday's Alliance of Baptists annual gathering worship. 2 weeks ago now. You can still celebrate yourselves. All right. No, I like it. That's just a little applause there. Look at that! You're still doing it. So Reverend Judge Wendell Griffin wasn't supposed to pull together a sermon on the fly with way less than 24 hours notice. But it was Friday night. Sally, Elijah, and I were at a banquet dinner hosted by the Baptist Joint Committee on Religious Liberty, the BJC. Elijah looked down at his phone. He looked up at me and said, "We need to talk." See, Reverend Dr. Otis Moss III was scheduled to preach the next morning, but his flight had just been canceled because of a snowstorm in Chicago blowing through the Midwest on April 27th. April 27th! Pastor Griffin was also at the dinner a few tables past us. We pulled him aside, told him what was happening, and without an ounce of hesitation, he agreed to preach the next morning, and preach he did. He preached so deeply, so powerfully, that we turned our entire Easter sermon series upside down. Well, not exactly all the way upside down, more like right side up. We'd originally entitled the series Make Us One in honor of our weekly holy refrain that we sing during the passing of the peace. Together with all the Father and I are one passages just strewn throughout John's gospel, we were going to engage the concept of oneness within the Christian tradition, the oneness of God, the oneness of community, the oneness of our inner selves, and we were going to let the mystic gospel of John be our guide. We hadn't gotten much farther than that. And there it was, bellowing out of Pastor Griffin's on-the-fly snowstorm improv Saturday morning sermon. God's got an obsession, a divine obsession with oneness. I could feel the electricity running down my spine as I stood in the back of the sanctuary over there because I was too excited to actually sit in a pew. God's got an obsession, a divine obsession with oneness. And there it was, and here it is. And here we are, obsessing with God about God's obsession with oneness. I still honestly can't get over this depiction of God, the one that Pastor Griffin painted for us that unexpected morning. It's a full-bodied, full-throated, fullness-making depiction of God, one that invites us to see God as obsessed, stuck on, refusing to let go of the possibility, better yet, the absolute necessity, the centrality, the longing God has for oneness. Pastor Griffin put it this way: God's got an obsession, God's got a hang-up, if I can attach that affliction to God. God's got an issue with community. God's got an issue with alienation. God's got issues with estrangement. God's got issues with fragmentation. God is so hung up about it. So powerful to me to think of God as divinely obsessed, afflicted with, hung up on oneness. Maybe even a little dogmatic, if you'll allow me the space to bring up dogmatism. we journey, and as we journey with John's gospel, we'll see that God's obsession is Jesus' obsession too. Jesus says, "My sheep listen to my voice, and no one will snatch them out of my hand. My Father who has given them to me is greater than all. No one can snatch them out of my Father's hand. I and the Father are one." And since today we hold mothers and mothering closely to us, I and the mother, Father are one. We are one. This is all one. Pastor Griffin asked us this divine question 2 weeks ago, one that I still can't shake. Have you ever lost something that you misplaced or mislaid and have felt the feeling that comes with not being able to put your hand on what you know belongs to you? That feeling of incompleteness. Have you ever lost something that you misplaced or mislaid and have felt the feeling that comes with not being able to put your hand on what you know belongs to you? The feeling of incompleteness. What a magnificent, brilliant way to describe violence. See, at the end of the day, violence to God is the ache of incompleteness, of fragmentation, of this longing, this obsession with oneness coming apart at the seams. Do you see that? So this is why our hearts ache at the border, why our hearts ache at police brutality, why our hearts ache when someone struggling with mental illness thinks they don't deserve care, why our hearts ache when we realize that even a day like today leaves many women hurting or isolated or are not able to come to church as they carry many types of griefs, miscarriages, failed adoptions, the death of a parent, the rejection of a parent. This is why our hearts ache when microaggressions pile up one after another and they keep beloved members of our community from actually thriving in our community. And this is why, as hard as it is, we have to gather together and we have to get up here Sunday after Sunday after Sunday and talk about the alienation. We have to talk about the fragmentation. We have to talk about the things that are pulling us apart at the seams as a people, as humanity, as image bearers of God. Because God's obsession must be our obsession too. Jean Vanier, a beautiful theologian and reimaginer of the gospel who died this week, put it this way: the longer we journey on the road to inner healing and wholeness, the more the sense of belonging grows and deepens. The sense is not just one of belonging to others and to a community. It is a sense of belonging to the universe, to the earth, to the air, to the water, to everything that lives, to all humanity. This week, Sally and I spent a day with a group of clergy women who have been meeting every few months together this past year to talk about the burdens and blessings that only a roomful of other pastors can understand. For this gathering, we decided to stay in Dorchester County to spend some time at the Harriet Tubman Visitor Center, learning about the life and witness of, can I say it, an American saint. Talk about a divine obsession with oneness. A relentless, unyielding refusal to accept isolation, alienation, and fragmentation. There's so much I could tell you about Reverend Dr. Mystic Mother Moses Tubman, all of those titles deserved, whether a piece of paper says so or not. But I want us to sit with this. After making the journey through the marshes and swamps of Maryland into Delaware and on to freedom, Harriet Tubman could not stop there. She was obsessed with oneness, with our nation's oneness, with the gospel's oneness, with her own internal oneness, with her community's oneness. She made, as Sally said, 13 trips back through those marshes and swamps. Do y'all hear me? She made 13 trips back through those marshes and swamps, finding enslaved people willing to make the journey back up with her. She came back for family members. She came back for strangers. She came back for as many as her body and spirit could take. Thomas Garrett, a white abolitionist in Delaware and a common stop for her and others on the Underground Railroad, described Tubman this way in a letter to a friend. "I never met with any person of any color who had more confidence in the voice of God as spoken direct to her soul. She has frequently told me that she talked with God and God talked with her every day of her life. And she has declared to me that she felt no more fear of being arrested by her former master, for she said she only ventured where God sent her. And her faith in a supreme power truly was great." Which then, oddly enough, got me to thinking about Thomas Garrett, a white man who owned land, who could have ignored the fragmentation and isolation, living and moving and having its being all around him in the farmlands of Delaware as people are slinking through the middle of the night to freedom. He could have gone to sleep. But instead, as his Quaker faith called him to do, he risked his life. He went to prison. He lived with death threats and insecurity. And in the process, he became divinely obsessed with God's obsession with oneness. I mean, can you imagine that fireside conversation with Harriet Tubman in the black of night, when she would find her way to his cabin with a handful of enslaved sojourners? Can I take you there a minute? Will you picture it with me? Can you imagine what it must have felt like for him to extend his hand of friendship and solidarity to this inordinately soulful, powerful black woman? Can you imagine what it must have felt like for him to know that he was participating in the world's mending? In putting the fragments back together? In refusing to believe that the nightmare of alienation was the best any of us could do? I don't know, maybe they just like chatted at that point in the night, but maybe my holy self wants to imagine Harriet saying, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, Thomas Garrett, I shall fear no evil." Did you know that right after Jesus makes this mystical claim about oneness, that the town tries to stone him? See, this divine obsession with oneness, I probably should have told you this on the front end, but you know, it doesn't tend to go over well. But y'all know that. Lots of time, people particularly more obsessed with power than oneness want us to stop talking so doggone much about oneness, to stop making a big deal about it, to stop mucking around with and calling out systems that are alienating us and fragmenting us. And this is the audacity of oneness, that it is obsessive. I mean, at this point, I feel like it's a perfume ad, but just roll with me. That it is obsessive, relentless, unyielding in the face of division and violence and alienation and fragmentation. Jesus says right before he makes this mystical claim of oneness, of connection, of intimacy, of union, "My sheep hear my voice, and no one will snatch them out of my hand." Nothing will keep us from being one. Nothing will keep God's relentless obsession with oneness from permeating the whole universe, all of creation, and every heart God touches. Howard Thurman describes it this way in a sermon on the role of worship. "The center of our undertaking, the heart of our commitment, summarizes itself in terms of the worship of God." And then he says, "I mean by the worship of God, the immediate awareness of the pushing out of the barriers of self, the moment when we flow together into one, when I am not male or female or yellow or green or black or white or brown or educated or illiterate or rich or poor or sick or well or righteous or unrighteous, but a naked human spirit that spills over into other human spirits as they spill over into me. Ooh. Together we become one under the transcending glory and power of the Spirit of the living God." The moment when we flow together into one, when nothing but a naked human spirit spills over into another human spirit as they spill over into me. Or as Pastor Griffin said on his Snowstorm Saturday impromptu sermon, "God's calculation is that all the numbers in the world have to add up to one in order for God to feel whole." One more time. "God's calculation is that all the numbers in the world have to add up to one in order for God to feel whole." This is audacious stuff. It's audacious enough to get us killed. It's audacious enough to save our lives. It's audacious enough to make us obsessed, relentless about oneness. Because until God feels whole, picture that, until God feels whole, until we feel whole, until we can shake that lingering feeling that something that belongs to us has been lost, until all is one, until we are one, until the earth is one, until ourselves are one, and as Pastor Griffin and many mystics before him keep calling us to see, until God is one, there is no stopping this obsession. God waits, struggles, like a parent, like a mother, like a father, like a friend, feeling that deep, moaning, aching feeling that something has been lost. And God won't give up until it's found. Will you?